Okay, so the topic in general is for mind and mental factors, and the reason why I've chosen this is because many people experience difficulties in terms of their mind, that there are many worries or distress and suffering that arise in relationship to the mind. Because of the importance of the mind in Buddhist teachings, there's a lot of explanation of mind and mental factors, because when you have even some understanding of this, it helps to identify what's arising in your mind, and you can see how that's creating suffering or unhappiness in the mind. And because you understand it, it's easier to actually overcome it. In Tibetan teaching, in Buddhist teaching, you have two aspects of mind or mind. And mind is covered, just to clarify, in English we mean by mind, we're saying all your mental events, whether that's emotional, heart, spirit, subconscious, subconscious, all those different words that we use in English are encompassed within this word mind in Tibetan. And so you have mind, and there are six types of mind, and then you have these associated mental factors, and of which there are 51. Okay, so when we speak of these six types of mind, there are five associated with the five sense consciousnesses, and one which is your mental consciousness. And then the kind of the different ideas that causes distress and suffering and so on may arise in relationship to the sense consciousnesses, or they can be to do with kind of exaggerated, overlaid concepts arising from your mental consciousness. So you have the five of senses, as we said before, relate to the five senses of eye, ear, nose, tongue or taste, and body, your body sense consciousness. And so, for example, with the eye, the forms that we see, and depending on whether they're pleasing, you see either things that appear pleasing to you or displeasing, or you may see something neutral. And then in relationship to whether it is pleasing or displeasing, other concepts arise.
관심 따랐다 이 실수부터 이기 남도를 주제지 관심을 맡은 대로 남도를 뜨니까 지금 먹게 해준 거 왔다 이 시도 왔다 다른 사람도 쓴 거라도 싶어 다른 센스를 봐.
No, that. And then you have your mental consciousness, so that's not, not the sense consciousness. It's the different ideas and concepts that arise in the mind. And so then you have kind of associated secondary minds, which is what is referred to as the mental factors. And so when we count them, we said there were 51, but I just will come back to looking at kind of not necessarily all of them, but what parts and how they arise, how they affect the mind. Okay, so using your sheet, on one side you've got at the top it says omnipresent factors, five on, and it's on the left hand column, and this is the ever-present. There are five ever-present factors. No, hang on. No, no, not the top. Middle, sorry. I looked at the omnipresent factor. It's not. Middle, number 23, feeling discrimination. It should say ever-present.
Mm.
Okay, so of these five, so these five, which is reflected by omnipresent or ever-present mental factors, feeling, discrimination, intention, contact, and mental engagement, whatever mind, in terms of whether it's a mental consciousness or a sense consciousness, arises, it will have these five associated factors. It will have an aspect of feeling, of discrimination, intention, contact, and mental engagement. Okay, so for example, when you see something like visible form, it will there is an associated feeling, there is discrimination about the object, intention, contact, mental engagement. So the feeling being like pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So you see something that's pleasing and there's an associated pleasant feeling, something that you dislike and an association of an unpleasant feeling, or a neutral object that you, doesn't make you react, and so you have a neutral feeling. And you get the same thing with a mental consciousness when you're thinking about it, or when you're kind of having an exaggerating the qualities of the object. If you're becoming angry with it, there will be an associated unpleasant feeling. If you something that you like, then you get a pleasant feeling. something you feel neutral about, then again a neutral feeling. So that kind of the consciousness arises, and then that associated feeling. Okay, and then you get the discrimination as regards that object that kind of discriminates its character, and that's again whether it's a sense or a mental consciousness. And then intention. So intention is like the motivating factor that causes you to actually engage in the object. If you had no intention or nothing that was directing you to engage in that object, then your mind wouldn't hold it. So that intention. And then contact again. Once you get the three coming together in terms of the object, the mind. Okay, so if you had three in terms of the object, a sense consciousness apprehending it, and then mental consciousness following that, with those three coming together, then you establish contact. And then the fifth factor of mental engagement is like being stably engaged with the object. It's like that really means that your mind, I guess, is focusing on it. It's engaging with it in a very stable way.
What
is the
discrimination? What are you actually
discriminating?
So it's like that specific object as opposed to anything else?
Oh, you're
right. Okay,
so that you can say omnipresent or ever present, I think, is more kind of common use in that now, being always there, and so that whatever the mind is, those factors will be associated with it and arise. Okay, so those are the ones that are there all the time, whatever the mind or sense consciousness is, they are always there. Whereas all the other ones we talk about after that, sometimes they're there, sometimes they're not. So sometimes if there's an afflictive emotion arising, it's there, or a positive, a virtuous mind. So the other ones will come and go.
Last question. Is that they're always there no matter how pure or perfect better, in inverted commas, your mind gets?
Yep.
Or are they
most normal people.
So
Yes. Okay, so those five will be there, but if you were looking at someone who is kind of generating greater qualities of mind, then the associated feeling will always be like a pleasant or a feeling of happiness, because it is afflictive emotion like anger that is mostly associated with unpleasant feelings.
So they're kind of like the underlying structure.
Yeah, the causes the sem kipper sigaro de sem yishe wonshe dan kundrunga kipper record yunten nanshin. Yes, so they're like the structure or the different, what is it, your basic categories. Mm-hmm. The difference would be between having a kind of a greater realization or lesser would be the arisal of actually the feeling of happiness, a pleasant feeling. Janet.
Yeah, so when we explain feelings, we say they are neutral, pleasant, and unpleasant. So then they already be discrimination. So what do we need to have another? What do we need to have a discrimination separated out from feelings?
So what then do she keep a chair against in carrying? Yeah, because they are different. Just to get the question clear in my mind, are you thinking that because you discriminate the object, you would have a feeling with that anyway?
No, I mean, so here when we are talking about the feeling alone, the first neutral factor, we say that so the feeling has neutral. The feeling could be neutral, could be pleasant, or could be unpleasant.
Yeah.
So which means by saying that we already separate the feelings into these three categories. So they already discrimination for one feeling from another.
In this case, in a more, guess somebody. Tsoro mandrao sun dile duše hako go resti tsoro mandrao sun. Even de yul, duše de yul, megba yul roa, de tsoro marwa.
Yul tana, tsoa ina da duše ina tsoa duše sembara, dige tama yul ko yul chikparwa. Chiki yul marta.
Yeah, the discrimination isn't focused on the feeling. That you have an object,
right,
like the cup,
mm-hmm,
and so you would have discrimination of the cup, a feeling associated with the cup. You're not discriminating, that when we're talking about the discrimination, it's focused on the object, not on the discriminating the feelings.
Is it like a perception?
So it's like the table is the table and the cup's the cup. So you discriminate by saying that's the cup.
The bena kayul dan chokse kibra chawa dushegi dushegi chale.
Ode dushegi chale ya diti suna chale. Dushegi chale de ko yul didu wala ko chokse da tu stati je tu smiki tadi wala ko chokse da dek mikse ge dek diti suna ko mikse ge dek diti suna. Ile dek amla ko tele dek suna nang towa chi panyum chi towa chi yung korwa ta yul.
Yeah, so the discrimination is of the object. Say, for example, if you have a table and a book and you're specifically focusing on the book, your discrimination is focused on the book, but there will be an associated feeling of... So the object of the discrimination is not the feeling, the object is the book. And
right.
And associated with that will be some feeling.
So you're more talking about this discrimination can be interpreted as a differentiation for the objects. So it's nothing to do with the feelings?
Yeah, well, the feelings are not the object of that discrimination.
No.
That the discrimination isn't focused on the feeling, it's focused on the
what, it's more the general object. Than we hold some objects close but others distant. I mean, in terms of discrimination, then we say there are some hierarchy there, or...
No, it's not that kind of... It's not a hierarchical discrimination. It's...
not discrimination in the whole sense.
Yeah, so it's more differentiation. There's
another translation. What's the other translation? They don't use differentiation. I'm trying to think.
Is it to do with true reality, that you're discriminating that something's reality?
It's not that complicated.
No,
it's
not.
Just what's the other word they use for it?
It's just what you bring your attention on, isn't it?
Deciphering. No, it's a very simple word. Discrimination or the tsik enji tsik jambalyu.
Identification.
It's another D word, but I can't.
Identification.
No, but basically it's that same thing. It is identifying an object. The shaled and migul jemba mayemba migul dires du shegir shale roa. Yeah. So it's you could use differentiate, but it's not going on to separate everything out. No. It's simply that's your object as opposed to anything else. So it's not like you're differentiating and thinking.
Separate it's from your emotion to the object. Just the reality of the object as opposed
it's
to separate.
That you there is a there will be Gishla Pena on us, Pena Kayul.
Yeah.
Mm. So when your eye focuses on the cup, there is a discrimination.
It
defines it, identifies that you're focused on the cup. That's your object. And then. So that the object of all those five things would be the same, like the cup. And then they are of one nature in terms of being
one nature.
So their nature is mind, but they are different aspects. This thing of or different they are different aspects, different focuses that arise in the mind in relationship to that one object. So for example, they speak of those five factors as having, they will all have the same object, the same appearance, the same basis arise at the same time.
Right, so they're not chronological.
No, they're different aspects of appearing in the mind in association with an object. Does that clarify? Okay.
So here there's many mental practices. So we go this, which is more important. We go that
Then you took the catch, I was wondering about the also the determining mental factors, because they're the basis of one's practice, that we have these nazo things in range and semnala you agonas
semping do and the dumba sent one and but the you know so my check give code to the
shikare yes
the kewach kuna the code to the la you may stress
so then just on the divisions of determining factors you the that comes under the ever presence, these are basically factors that are there that are associated with primarily with virtue, like with positive states of mind. Aspiration. So that aspiration is in reference to when we aspire in a kind of a positive or a virtuous way, like aspiring to practice meditation, aspiring to understand the Four Noble Truths, our spiritual aspiration. It's not kind of the general aspiration towards any old object, it's that kind of spiritual aspiration. No.
So just a quick question. So I'm sure that there are a lot here we can learn more. So is there any text or book we can read if we want to know more about the mental factors of any kind?
Yes. One dip. Dip your on Kindle, on ebook. There is the Necklace of Good Fortune. If you go into Amazon, I'm not sure if it's printed, hard copy, but there is a good Kindle ebook copy called The Necklace of Good Fortune, or for the lucid, I think, that covers the mind and mental factors. And it's also in Meditations on Emptiness in the earlier... Meditation on Emptiness is like a reference book that you'd go to. It's not something you can read from beginning to end, but it's in the second chapter or something. It deals with mind and mental factors. And
so was it Necklace of Good Fortune for the Lucid?
Yeah, I can double check. Yeah, and then Geshe Zopa's put out one book, I think, that deals with mind and mental factors. So belief is also like having a conviction, or that, for example, having a conviction or a belief in action and effect. Then mindfulness. So then you have mindfulness. So mindfulness is a really important factor. We always talk about meditation, you know, use the term meditation, but what you're talking about in meditation is an object of your mindfulness. It's remembering or being mindful of a particular object, and so that's a very important factor.
Tempat sekitar you look kalau kamu kahwin jadi nanti tu,
takarana kundi pachi tani dele tadi chamba chamba dilwa dilwa sidang ang tadi di tadi di na siya di sidang debe debe chamba chamba siya di tadi di chamba di mare.
Okay, all right. So that, so this mindfulness is the factor that you are using, whatever your meditation is, the mindfulness is what you're using to hold your object of meditation. It's not mindfulness in terms of like remembering some event of the past or that kind of recall or memory. It's being the mindfulness that you use in your meditation to stay on the object. Yeah, and also it's so it's, oh, the other thing Geshe-la said that before that was that it's also mindfulness. This mindfulness is an association with your mental consciousness. It's not mindfulness in relationship to a sense consciousness. And so, for example, to use the mindfulness to hold the object, you need to have some familiarity with the object. It needs to be something that you have some experience of or familiarity. If there's no familiarity with it, there's no way to hold the object. So whatever you're meditating on, whether it was emptiness or anything else, you need a familiarity in order to use your mindfulness to hold the object. Okay. Yeah, the Ukla Megbadaya Tremba Gugre. Okay, so that one point would be when, if you're using meditation on the breath, then you don't need this, it's not like a mental object where you need familiarity. You do use your mindfulness to focus on the breath, but it's not like what Geshe-la's just been explaining, needing familiarity. It's more to do with a mental object of meditation, whereas if you're just focused on the breath, you don't need that that same familiarity you use, but you do use your mindfulness.
Yeah, but if you breathing meditation, but you have to focus on the breathe. Yeah, this kind of mindfulness you need, you have to do this.
Yeah.
But if you focus in other things which you unpleasant things, which stress things, yeah. So then it is not properly breathing meditation.
Yes, so if you're focusing on the breath, well, instead of focusing on the breath, you're putting your mindfulness, like holding all the unpleasant thing that's happened, you've lost your meditation, because your actual, what you're needing to be mindful of is the breath, not the stuff.
So what's awareness? Yeah. What about the concept of outside meditation, like just being mindful or being
When you say mindfulness and being in the moment, are you thinking mostly of being mindful of what you're doing or being mindful of what's arising in your mind? Sorry?
So if I'm listening to Geshe-la, I'm just bringing my, so there's a mental factor of being present, to listening to your words. So there is an element that, and it could be a physical thing too. So if I'm, you know, so if I'm aware of my hand picking up my bottle, so both physical and mental.
Okay. Lugi mekpachena tremba chegrwa te so so ta lugi kari chena te magya longwa te kari chena te tremba che chamba de sim pena gesla sum gesla di sum nyendu te tremba ya bu che te tremba ge te mindfulness rewes te tremba
this is mindfulness yeah but of course when we do the meditation, when we do the whatever meditation, like, of course, breathing meditation, when you focus on the breath, at the same time, you have to, there's the other mind,
Sheshin, introspection.
Yeah, introspection. We have to check, your mind is still on the breathing or not, you know. So. You need these two things here.
Two things.
Yeah.
So in session, in session, you have your mindfulness of the object, and you also have an introspection, which is checking on whether you're staying on the object or not. And tunjela tremba bejuchewa de shuzu zupudro tankariyana singidrota
tunjela.
Sunjela, Zuboge, Injila mindfulness, Lugi tremba there, Zubukari taking a there's that tremba there's Simgi tremba, Dinala Kankyo Chimbres, there's Simgi tremba yena there. So between the two, if you're talking about mindfulness post session, between being mindful of your physical actions or being mindful of your mind, being mindful of your mind is more important. Tingyidzin. Being constant. Stabilization, or this Tingyidzin is also described as concentration. That's me saying, but because we have stabilization is this mind that is able to remain one pointedly on an object. So whatever your meditation, whether it is an analytical meditation or a placement meditation, whatever kind of meditation is, our mind is able to stay on it one pointedly. And what I was saying to Yeshla is, this is something that our mind has for all of us. It's not something that we can't do. It is there. That ability is there within our mind.
Yeah. So these things, you know, of course, maybe we talk later. Actually, we have our mind always, there's stress and reflective emotion always there. Yeah. But our mind is not absolutely
and not innately.
Huh?
Not innate.
Yeah, not innate. Better said, better said.
Yes, so that our mind, even though we have these arisal of the many different kind of afflictive emotions like stress and anger and pride and so on, this is not the actual nature of the mind. Our nature of the mind is clear of these things.
So this is the
So because the mind is by nature clear or pure of these things, that there is always, for when you have mind, whether it is as a human or as a person, when there is the presence of mind, even if that was in a bud, there is the potential then to attain Buddhahood because of this natural clarity of the mind. This is referred to as the Buddha nature, as the seed of Buddhahood. It means that the presence of mind has always that potential to attain Buddhahood, no matter what the immediate physical form is. Obviously for humans that possible, but also for tiny insects. Okay, so that the what we refer to as the stains like attachment or anger or envy, all these things are temporary. They are not inherently in the nature of the mind. Therefore, the purity of the mind can be realized. And the, in terms of Buddhist texts, there's a text called Uttara Tantra, which talks about, uses 9 metaphors for this ability of the mind to free itself from temporary stain and realize the pure potential of the mind.
So this is kind of very good news. We have able to become Buddha, you know. This is very good news.
Even the insects,
of course, tiny insects, even being who is in hell realms, you know.
So whatever living being there is, in whatever state, whether it is a hellish state, whether it is a tiny insect, if, because they have mind, their nature of the mind is pure, they have the potential to attain Buddhahood. So every living being, wherever in the universe, wherever they may be, whatever form they may be in, the potential of their mind is to attain. There is always the yundu yore, the chegma. And that potential of the mind to attain Buddhahood has been there since beginningless time. That potential doesn't go away or stop or disappear. It is always there.
So does that mean that there are spiders, cats, dogs walking around that have attained Buddhahood?
That's not what we're saying. That's a separate question. Mm. That's a different question. The point that Geshe is making at present is whatever the immediate form is, the potential is always there. And then separate to that, you can say, would the Sanye, the Krulwachena, the Shimiyena, the Bhusanyena, Najan, Krulwache, Tokuruas, Sanye Ran. So if you were to say, could the Buddha manifest as a cat or a dog or an insect? Yes. That's the form. Someone with those kind of realizations may appear in different forms if it's beneficial to sentient beings. But the other point is that whether they've realised it or not, they have a potential. And that potential doesn't go away, and it's been there since beginningless time. Toma me ba ne yura. So the one of the analogies they would use is like a rice that is within the husk. The nature of the rice, as the white rice that is edible, is hidden by the husk. And so, but if you remove the husk, then you see the white grain and you can make use of it. Someone can eat it to ease their hunger. And so that's one of the analogies they use for these obscurations of mind. They're like stains that obscure the nature of the mind, but they can be eliminated. Okay, so then the specific characteristic of being as a human is that we have the specific characteristic as a human is that even if at this point in time anger, attachment, jealousy and so forth arise in our mind and causes distress and unhappiness, we are able to identify them and eliminate them. So that's a specific skill, ability that we have as humans, whereas beings with the same potential, so to speak, but who are born as a cat or an animal or other insects, they don't have that same availability of that skill. So that's a characteristic of being human that's very useful for us.
Can I ask a question? Just the practicality of stabilisation, and you said that it's being able to stay on an object, you know, one-pointedly.
Yep.
What if your mind is so, so afflicted by your emotions and everything? What's a practical way of being able to get some sort of stability?
Okay. Then I got some things and things and. It's a big question. It's a huge question. Okay, so it's a big question. The easiest way to, or a simple way to ask it, answer it, is is to identify the two main things that interfere with our ability to focus on an object, and that's your excitement, where your mind's wandering off to things because of being attached to them, and dullness, or laxity, where your mind's getting very low and heavy, like it's going to go into sleep. So those are the two things that stop us developing concentration or interfere with our development of concentration. Dumba kya na jin dumba shubche wa kya wa. Okay, so then if you're talking about what's going to overcome those interferences, like the excited, distracted mind, it's by remembering impermanence, by thinking about the faults of being born through karma and afflictive emotion, faults of cyclic existence. If you're looking at what overcomes laxity or dullness, it's things that lift the mind, like thinking of the qualities of the Buddha or the qualities of developing concentration, things which would lift your aspiration and kind of pick you up. So, and one of this kind of what they describe as a forceful immediate method for overcoming the wandering mind is to bring your attention back on the breath and just use the breath to settle your mind down and to bring it back to your meditation, whatever that is. That's good. So then the last one of wisdom, in general, it's that which kind of analyzes well, analyzes an object well, or understands an object well. And so if we were to give a specific example of wisdom, one of the most important is the wisdom that understands emptiness. But you also have the wisdom that understands impermanence, because through not understanding impermanence and grasping it at oneself as always being permanent, through grasping itself as being permanent, lots of difficulties, stresses, and sufferings arise. Okay, so a good example about this wisdom of impermanence and its benefit is that if you look at composite phenomena, things that are arising from causes and conditions composed of parts, that because they come, whatever it is that arises from parts and causes and conditions will change. But generally we don't kind of think about that. We don't, it's not that we don't know it, but you don't understand it practically. And so we grasp it as being permanent and continually present, and because we grasp at them in this way, then when they change we become very upset and distressed. Whereas if you really understood, if you really had this wisdom of understanding impermanence, you would know that was its nature and you wouldn't get distressed in that way. Okay, so if we look, most of the things in our external world are arising from causes and conditions, and as such are changeable, and even momentary change, phenomena that undergo momentary change. But we don't kind of look at it in that way, and so we grasp at them as being stable and permanent, and then become very distressed because if they're not remaining stable and permanent. Okay. So then we're going on to the root afflictions on the other chart 26. So those five object determining factors that we've talked about are mostly associated with virtuous positive minds. And now we're going to look at the other side, which is the root afflictions, as in chart 26. Okay. So, afflictive emotion, you could say a quality that is to afflict the mind, to, in the same way that if you had pure water that was then muddied, that would cause a problem. So the mind, when it is accompanied by these afflictive emotions, instead of being clear, it is muddied, it is afflicted by these emotions. Alright, so we, in terms of the overall breakdown, you have these six root afflictive emotions and 20 secondary afflictive emotions. So looking at the root ones first, at desire, the object of desire appears pleasing. It is a pleasing object. Its aspect is it's difficult to separate from that object, but its function is to give rise to unhappiness or suffering. Okay. So in terms of that pleasing object, that doesn't mean the object itself is by nature pleasing, but it's the way that the person is seeing it. That for that person, they overlay in whatever way such that the object appears pleasing to them. So that if you, and a way of illustrating that is if you took one object and you had several people, for some people that would appear pleasing, some people would think it was an unpleasing, kind of displeasing object, and some would feel neutral about it. And so it depends on how that kind of overlaying or exaggerating that object. Okay, the aspect that is difficult to separate from, they use an analogy of when you get oil in cloth. It's very difficult to get an oil stain out of cloth, and that's the quality of attachment. Okay. So then the function of giving rise to suffering, this isn't to do with the feeling associated with it, because with the feeling the associated feeling with desire will be a pleasant feeling, not a suffering feeling. But how it gives rise to suffering is because in the future, if one doesn't meet with or attain that object, then suffering or distress arises. So that's what the function is referring to.
So is it okay then to have a look at an object and find it pleasing, but not to become so attached to it that you think it's going to solve all your problems? So,
Okay. Then me you la yi do wa tong wa yin an de cha ba ma ke de su su ma tro wa ma sam ba yi do wa ta ga za tong wa de ge do wa Okay, so yes, that would be okay. It depends on the way you're looking at the object, and you would say that there is a difference of strength, like the strong attachment that sees an object as pleasing and then can't bear it if it is separated from or doesn't attain that object. Mm-hmm. Being different from just simply observing it as pleasing and not.
Thank you.
Okay. Then anger, control. So anger can have many different objects that are associated with suffering, or whether it is a person or a place or suffering itself, and its aspect is like a disturbed unhappy. I think they say unpeaceful, like a disturbed, unhappy, unpeaceful mind is its aspect. And its function is that it causes one not to have contact with happiness. So it is said that in association with happiness, with anger, there is no happiness. There is absolutely no happiness that arises in association with anger. So that if you're talking about the feeling, that ever-present feeling associated with afflictive emotion, that would be always unhappiness, unpleasant feeling, no arousal of a pleasant feeling. Okay, and so then the object that is associated with that disturbed, unpeaceful mind, there are kind of many objects with it, and you know, far too many to go into detail, but some of it can be to do with examples. The examples can be like the enemy, the person that you dislike, thinking that they harmed me in the past, or they're harming me at present, or they will harm me in the future. So this is your basis of anger. Or someone who's helping a person you dislike, and they helped my enemy, they helped that person I don't like in the past, or at present, or will do in the future. So those are bases that of that act as a the basis for arising anger. So this function of not causing one to remain in contact with happiness, the terms of the things that we can see, is when you, on the basis of being angry, you can't sleep. On the basis of it being angry, people that may have benefited you in the past, you actually forget that they helped you. On the basis of anger, you see more people as enemies and people that you dislike. It can cause even dislike and aversion among your close friends and family. So there are many examples that we can see of that effect of not remaining in contact with happiness through becoming angry. And then you get unseen effects, but we won't go into that one. Okay. So then, just to clarify the difference between attachment and anger, that it's easier to directly see the harm that anger brings oneself, whereas the harm that arises from attachment is more difficult to see. In terms of abandoning them, it's easier to abandon anger than it is to abandon attachment.
So what would be,
Okay, so one aspect is remembering the faults of anger. Looking from another side, all our meditations on bodhicitta, meditating on love and compassion, all those things help.
So is it the faults of anger?
Faults of anger is one. And the other side is our meditations on love compassion, bodhicitta, they also help to prevent the arisal of anger. Okay, so for example, when we generally talk about meditating on love and compassion, one thinks of compassion for all sentient beings, love for all sentient beings. In meditating on that, we think about the fact that since beginningless time we have had a connection to whoever it may be. There is nobody that we are not connected to. And that over that time they have always extended us great kindness, and that even if in the temporary situation where they may seem like the person we dislike or are harming us, it's a situation where we don't recognize the close relationships we've had with them in the past. And so, whereas if we see and focus on the fact that they have benefited us many times over the span of time, then if there's some temporary short-term problem, you don't become angry about it, because overall they're close and dear. Okay, so when we're talking about this meditating on love and compassion, it's this basis of that there is nobody with whom we do not have a connection, that we are not linked in some way, and then over many lifetimes they have benefited us, but we don't remember. As we change from lifetime to lifetime, we don't remember these close relationships. And if we focus more on that long-term benefit and get some conviction in that, then if there's some temporary harm or difficulty, that doesn't disturb us. You don't get angry in the same way. Whereas if we just focus on the immediate, there's some harsh words or some problem, and then we think of them as like a permanent enemy, suddenly they become this stable, permanent, dislikable person, enemy, then automatically all those conditions make anger very easy.
Do you think that arises from the fact we feel like people are taking away our happiness? So it's like a selfish...
You get angry. The jingi soso dewala bache chewa kongtro kegadoe.
Kongtro kegadoe. Kongtro kegadoe. Kongtro kegadoe. Kongtro rangi te wala bhaji chaya tu tu ye pun chi ko kansa khona la dawa me parwa kansa ti ni ye mo ge pun chi ye parwa kansa ta ni ma ye chi ba chi kansa khona ni mo ge ra me ba chi ta tu tu sam ta ne chaya tu tu ta ni ye mle chi ta ta tu tu re de ba ta yes me chi che le la wo ye ta ni ye se me te
so yes when you feel like someone is stopping your happiness or being an obstacle, then you can get angry. And so one of the practices is differentiating the person from their afflictive emotion and seeing that people behave in ways that are driven by their reflective emotion. That is not the person themselves that's at fault. And that because they're kind of driven uncontrollably by those afflictive emotions, they're not becoming angry with the person. And I'm not saying that's an easy practice. Going back to... Okay. So that, you know, we've been talking about mind and mental factors, and so to talk about the relationship with the person and the mind and the mental factors, the person kind of is directed by the mind. Even the fact that we arrived here this morning was because this morning we got up and thought, that's what I'll do. And so the person, through that direction of mind, arrived here at this place. So you can see how the mind directs the person. And then if that person is directed by the power of afflictive emotion in their mind, then that's the behavior that will arise from it because of that underlying kind of drive of the afflictive emotion. And so when others are kind of behaving harmfully or whatever, that if we differentiate between the person and the afflictive emotion, not seeing the person as at fault, but seeing that it is their afflictive emotion, then that's a means not to become angry. And this was a way of practice that all the past Buddhas and Bodhisattvas cultivated, and so that's kind of why it's explained as a method in Buddhist texts. Actually, did we answer your question, Sharon?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, so then we have pride. Okay, so then pride, the object of pride is oneself, the idea of oneself in one's own continuum. And its aspect is like a puffed up or a kind of puffed up arrogant mind. But its function is actually gives rise to suffering. Then you nem ma kiwa.
So this is that and my dad and poba ni le chapa chapa ta.
Oh no. And you the mama shiwa. Ye shi na poba bodo.
Ko go re. Ye shi de mo go re. So ta ma ye. Poba si de ki ni ji. Poba me ba ni na de da ka che wa na. Ah, poba ma ba.
Okay. So, then we need to differentiate between pride and self-confidence, because self-confidence is something we need. If we don't have self-confidence, we will never be able to accomplish anything we try and do. So,
what is self-confidence? Mm. So self-confidence is very important. in our daily life, also the spiritual practice. If you don't have that kind of mind,
self-confidence,
you can't get anything. You know, I can what?
I can do.
You know, if you say always, you know, I can't go. You come back, and you can't achieve anything. But
So if you keep telling yourself, I can't do it, then that stops you achieving.
Yeah, as I said before, we all have a Buddha nature, you know. Mm. Yeah? Mm. So we can do anything. Right.
Yeah.
So past past being your past Buddha and Bodhisattva, before they are same like us, you know. Same like us. Very reflected mind, yeah?
Yeah.
And later, you know, they make effort, and then, you know, they enlighten, you know. It's them things, you know. Yeah?
Yes, so we can do the same.
You know, the cheating chavas.
Ordinary activities.
Cheating chavas,
So even if we look at self-confidence in our ordinary activities, whether it's the work we're doing or the business or study, if we don't have a sense I'm able to do this, then that lack of confidence stops us accomplishing even ordinary things separate to spiritual practice. So if we, without confidence, without the self-confidence, it's like we're closing the door on things.
Yes, but the pride is different. Yeah? Mm.
So my pride has a difference. So pride is different. Pride is like seeing oneself as higher or better, kind of puffed up, and so that you would then, from that state of mind, you put other people down. You see them as people who may have qualities, but you see them as not having qualities. People, young people may look at old people and put them down because of pride of youth, or towards people who are sick or, you know, physically infirm. There's someone who's feeling proud compared to someone who's physically infirm will put them down. So those are the examples of pride. So you can see it. The difference between confidence and pride.
Mm-hmm.
Would equanimity overcome pride? Panyom la da kongiena nagil mewa sugurwith. Yes. Because when equanimity in this is like generating an equality, an equal attitude towards all sentient beings. And so if you have that, that will overcome, or cultivate that, it will overcome. Yeah, but also all those previous meditations we were talking about, like love, compassion, bodhicitta, all of those also will act to antidote pride. Okay, so without going into them, if you refer in the text, you'll find they talk about seven aspects of pride, or the pride of being thinking one is equal to someone of great qualities or only slightly inferior to someone. Yeah, and mistaken pride, where someone feels proud about something that's actually not a quality. Yeah. Yeah, and pride of when you with someone who's actually your kind of peer or your equal, but you're feeling, I'm slightly, I guess we'd say superior mind, I'm a bit better than they are. Mm. So lots of examples of pride like that. And another aspect that I want to mention is in often in text you will find like taking the advice of taking the lowest position in the 8 verses, seeing oneself as lower than others. But this, in it's kind of, we would say, being humble. But the purpose of saying take the lower is to not give rise to pride. It's not saying don't be self-confident. It's not an advice that is contradicting self-confidence, but it is an advice to not give rise to pride. Okay. So then ignorance is a kind of a very vast space. Its object can be all phenomena. What its aspect is being obscured or mistaken about the object. And its function is to assist other afflictive emotions.
If you take ignorance further, is that ignorance of causes and conditions? That's we have ignorance of causes and conditions because that's the primary factors of setting off the other afflictive emotions.
Right. I'm not aware of it. Marigba Yudan Ken Ha Makona de Nyomonjing Ke Sigures.
By ignorance, it causes all affective emotions and also the root of all that affective emotion is ignorance. Root.
And so, not knowing cause and condition, Geshe-la was explaining it's, if you go down to its very root, is it's not knowing the nature of phenomena, not understanding the view, like down to emptiness.
Yeah. Another thing is that all reflective emotion, whatever reflective emotion,
All afflictive emotion is associated with ignorance, then it is all associated with this not clearly seeing the nature of reality of things. And so therefore, because it lacks that clear understanding at the beginning, it then automatically the afflictive emotion gives rise to suffering.
Definition.
So the function, that's why the function of ignorance is said to be that it gives rise to other afflictive emotions. In a maripa panto grua. Yeah, de kozo chikana hako ma. So I sketched that to explain, because ignorance can be abandoned. It's not something you can't, that you're stuck with. Ignorance can be abandoned. Okay, so we were talking about mind, and this, the fact that we do not clearly see all phenomena is principally due to the obscuration through ignorance. So to go back to the analogy we used before of the rice and the husk, that when the husk is on the outside and you don't see the rice inside, the principal thing that husk would represent is ignorance. Sorry. If you remove the grain, then you see the grain, you're able to make use of the grain, and it's beneficial. And so likewise, if we clear away ignorance, then we are able to clearly see all phenomena, and that's where you get the quality of the all-knowing mind. And so one, the ignorance, when we say it does not clearly see phenomena, it grasps at phenomena as being truly inherently, unchangingly existent in a way that they don't. So you clear ignorance by developing an unmistaking understanding of the nature of phenomena.
Yeah, one other question about this. So here we are talking about dealing with our own ignorance, but we do have people around. They may hold others responsible for their unhappiness, so which means they will need people to do this and that to meet their definition of kindness. So when people didn't meet their definition of kindness, they would hold other people not being kind of them and hold them responsible for their kindness. So for this kind of projection from others, there's not really like we can clear their mind. We can only focus on ours based on this. So in a situation like this, what do we do about others?
All right.
Should we just mind our own business?
Yeah,
your mind. I think my that's a condition.
So, in terms of oneself cultivates patience and undisturbed mind. In terms of what you can, if you, whatever you're able to explain to the person or help them understand or get a different view on it, one does. So you explain or help clarify as you can, but from your own side, in terms of your own mind, your practices patience in terms of being undisturbed by that.
So if the person choose to be unhappy after the explanation, then just be it, is it?
Yeah, de so so larger kaza gana si me kaza de sim maki bu de de yena de tab me nanshin do le. Pajo di sim maki bu. Pajo di sim maki bu yena larger gana yena jama sim maki bu yena. Yeah, so at that point, if you can't do anything practical, then at that point it's your aspiration and prayer that in the future may you be of benefit and that things go well for them, that their mind becomes happy. So, yeah. Yeah.
Buddha nature is always there, and that the obscure, the thing that's covering is ignorance.
Yep.
Sometimes by, you know, like even doing simple things like breathing meditation, it can help drop away all the thinking, you know, a lot of this other stuff. Although it might not, well, I don't have any understanding of emptiness.
Mm-hmm.
Is it helping me to sort of access that clarity of what my mind is?
Okay. Alright. Then sim yuna sangye garuma. Drubadi maribare. Then one lungom kedu lungo oki gomdu. Sim nam tot nyunga drawa de shiwayonwa. De tapshi de chena toni hama kona yina sim ki ranshin de tonwa pingerwis.
Nega ko namdo to the parties nero se jeva. Sita kona sim garanchi tonwa to nega to namdo to te te pen nega ka pao.
Re.
Ba.
Re.
Nega namdo. Nega namdo namdo sim de shiva yina na ko pen dungo.
Then sim shiva dembo yongwa de jema nelu tomwa pingruwa. So to say that it would immediately or in a short term sense give you access to the nature of the mind would be a difficult thing. But to say that by decreasing like the conceptual thinking mind so that your mind is less disturbed, and then if you keep that kind of undisturbed mind more stable, then that can act long term then as the basis for understanding emptiness. So short term, difficult to make a direct connection, but long term, yes.
Difficult.
In the short term. To make it, say it's short term, an immediate access to your the nature of the mind just through a developing a not busy mind through breathing meditation. But if that stabilizes and then you develop your analysis of emptiness, then yes, those
so
are.
So you say difficult, you're meaning not able.
If you were saying, because you said, will it give you access to it?
Yeah, I mean, right, you know, like, because if that's a nature all the time,
yeah,
then, and I convey it kind of in my mind, it works the same, well, there must be a way to access that now. Not, I'm not saying to be enlightened, but to, you know, like to be able to drop into some sense of that.
Right, okay.
Maybe we can leave that till next time, because it's 12 o'clock.
Yeah, it's 12 o'clock, that's true. We could come to it this afternoon, there's true gyawaras, that's all ningo. Maybe afternoon we can go back to it. It's a good, I mean, it's a good question. Okay, so we should stop because it's 12.
So if you don't go, 2 to approximately.